This is Mishmash, a weekly conversation where we try to unjumble an important and sometimes under the radar statewide story that affects you. I'm Shayna Roth.
And I'm Alethea Kasman.
It was primary week in Michigan, and while the outcome was as expected, with former President Donald Trump getting the Republican nod and current President Joe Biden getting the Democrat nod, the election wasn't without its share of drama.
Michigan historically loves a dramatic presidential primary. This year, it came mostly in the form of a protest vote against President Biden. A little over 100,000 voters chose uncommitted in the Democratic primary. This was mainly driven by a disagreement with the administration on its handling of the Israel-Hamas war and to show that they want a ceasefire. So Biden still won. This 100,000 votes, you know, depending on which side you talk to, the uncommitted side says, you know, we had a huge victory. The other side, Biden's side's like, well, maybe not so much. Democratic strategist Adrian Hamann told us that 100,000 votes really shouldn't worry the Biden camp when it comes to November.
In Great Britain, they refer to this as a damp squib. This was a giant nothing burger. Uncommitted got essentially the same percentage of the vote that it did in 2012. There were more absolute votes cast for both Joe Biden and for uncommitted. Some of that is just a function of the fact that you can practically vote accidentally in Michigan now. Between no reason absentee voting, 9 days of early in-person voting, same day registration. If you have an idea in the back of your mind that you might perhaps potentially like to vote, you've practically already voted. And so we see that reflected in how many people voted in what are typically pretty low turnout elections.
I mean, 100,000 people voting this way, to me, that seems like a lot, right? I mean, Biden received 600,000 votes plus overall in this uncontested primary. So percentage-wise, it was about 13%. And almost 11% voted uncommitted in 2012 when Obama was seeking re-election in an uncontested primary. But I do think that this is something the Biden camp should be taking seriously, just as a bit of like a weather vane of who are the voters that they need to start attracting when it comes to November, because a lot of polls have him losing Michigan to Trump. And I don't think he can win the general if he loses Michigan. I mean, he really needs all the votes he can get. I mean, 100,000 votes, if those uncommitted voters don't vote for him or don't vote at all or vote for Trump, I mean, that could swing the election.
For sure. I mean, I think a solid chunk of that 100,000 would vote for Biden if it was a Trump-Biden election today, just days after the primary. So it certainly sends a message, and I do think it's one the Biden campaign is trying to show that they hear, but I don't think it's a five-alarm fire for his campaign either. I think it builds on things that he already knew that he needed to work on. I think some of the uncommitted vote, you know, are people concerned about his age, progressive voters who might be concerned that he isn't going far enough to the left. So certainly shows there's work before November. It doesn't mean, you know, that Michigan is definitely going for Trump in November.
Yeah. Alethea, the Democrats made a big push to get the primary date moved up in Michigan to February from March. Do you think that with all of this uncontested or uncommitted drama going on, do you think that ended up hurting them in the end?
I don't. I think this uncommitted campaign would have happened either way. In fact, they maybe would have had more time had the primary been later. I think it remains mostly a non-factor this year. I don't think Michigan would have gotten less attention if the primary had been a week from now. And that's just because, you know, neither side has a contested primary. You know, certainly there are still Republicans. Nikki Haley is still running against former President Trump. But, you know, that is mostly a non-race, right? This is basically two incumbents. That's what it reminds me of, a two incumbent race who, you know, don't really have any challenges getting the nomination. The challenge comes after they have the official nomination later this year.
Yeah. But speaking of Nikki Haley, she did receive nearly 300,000 votes in the state with very minimal campaigning, 48,000 out of Oakland County, 25,000 out of Kent. I mean, this could be signs that Trump is in trouble with the suburbs, which he really needs if he wants to get Michigan. I mean, all signs point to him being the nominee, and the base and state party are behind him in Michigan, but he still needs to expand beyond that and siphon those swing voters if he wants to take the state.
Right. And that, you know, really remains to be seen. Trump has struggled with suburban voters. You know, it's hard to know if he can really expand his voting base beyond new voters. I think really trying to get kind of low interest Republican voters to the polls is probably his best bet, and hope that, you know, Biden alienates Democrats enough that turnout isn't, you know, as large as it has been in the last couple of cycles.
Well, we heard a little bit from Adrian Hemond, but when we come back, we're going to hear the rest of our interview with Adrian, and we're also going to be joined by John Selleck. They are both sides of the political divide coming together in what they call their baldly bipartisan partnership to unpack the primary. Stick around. Welcome back to Mishmash. I'm Shayna Roth.
And I'm Alethea Kasman. Today, we're joined by the team from Baldly Bipartisan, John Selleck and Adrian Hemond. Hi, Adrian.
How are you?
Hello, John.
Hello, Shayna.
All right, let's kick things off with the primary that just happened this week. So Joe Biden, Donald Trump won their respective primaries. No surprises there. But I want to start off with some of the non-winners, specifically Nikki Haley for Republicans and the uncommitted vote for Democrats. Let's start with Haley. She actually got 26.5% of the Republican primary vote to Donald Trump's 68.2%. John, what do you make of this?
Well, I think she's on the decline. It looks like she's going to walk away with a few delegates because of some of the rules. But, you know, she was talking about being 40%. She said after South Carolina, she's an accountant and she knows that 40% is not nothing. And she got 26% overall here. And the places that we would go and look for her similar voting patterns in other states, higher income levels, higher education levels, she didn't do as well as she needed to do, not even close. I mean, the most obviously core intense places that fit that mold on the west side is East Grand Rapids, and on the west side, it's Birmingham. So she won both of those. And then she just won a smattering of precincts in places like Bloomfield Township and Franklin and Beverly Hills, which, you know, in Michigan is not quite the California version, but we still consider it that. So she did not do well enough in those areas to pull forward. And I kind of wonder, she said she only campaigned for 2 days, but let's be realistic. The presidential campaign has been going on for a year and she's been heavily featured coming into Michigan. They threw in $500,000 worth of ads. I wish I got the commission on that for probably no reason here coming into Michigan, but they have the money. And the bottom line is that Donald Trump crushed it. He had, I think, about a third of the counties over 75% of the vote, and he's moving on.
And, you know, when we talk about Nikki Haley, you know, I think, too, the presidential primary, right, is high information voters. So her saying, you know, I only campaigned for 2 days, a lot of these voters probably knew going in when they were voting for her, I just don't want to vote for Donald Trump, right? But when we're looking forward to the general, can we pull anything from her performance in some of these suburban areas in Oakland and Kent and those cities that you mentioned? You know, are these voters that Trump can get in November, or are these people that, you know, are not going to vote for Trump regardless?
Well, it's a great question because, first of all, like you said, it's a high information voter participation deal. People are coming out, really like to pay attention and really like to go and vote. And so, like you said, what percentage of the people that voted for Haley were the people that were going to be no on Trump no matter what?
Yeah, I mean, Trump is going to get some of those people, just like he did in 2020. There is a durable section of the Republican primary electorate and Republicans in general that are repulsed by Donald Trump, but that doesn't mean that they won't vote for him. That's kind of how American politics works right now. There are plenty of Democrats that don't like Joe Biden who are going to end up voting for him because these are the choices that were being offered. The Haley campaign has functionally been over for a while. You know, we've seen the detritus from that over the last couple of weeks. You know, the Koch Network and Americans for Prosperity just cut the cord with her with supporting her campaign. But she is out there demonstrating that it turns out it's not Joe Biden that has the base problems. It's Donald Trump.
Let's talk a little bit about the uncommitted vote. Did that, you know, sort of wound Biden at all, Adrian? What do you make of the over 100,000 people who voted uncommitted in the Democratic primary?
In Great Britain, they refer to this as a damp squib. this was a giant nothing burger. Uncommitted got essentially the same percentage of the vote that it did in 2012, There were more absolute votes cast for both Joe Biden and for uncommitted. Some of that is just a function of the fact that it's you can practically vote accidentally in Michigan now. Between no reason absentee voting, 9 days of early in-person voting, same day registration. You know, if you have an idea in the back of your mind that you might perhaps potentially like to vote, you've practically already voted. And so we see that reflected in how many people voted in what are typically pretty low turnout elections.
You know, when we're talking about this slightly more than 100,000, which came to a little over 12%, maybe 13%, like you said, not a large number. And, you know, I wonder how many of these people would vote for Biden today if the general election was Trump versus Biden today, 4 days after the primary?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very fair question. You know, there are a lot of folks that want to be able to express their dissatisfaction with the choices that they're being given here. Saw that on the Republican side. You see an element of that on the Democratic side as well. Now, I'm not super enthusiastic about voting for Joe Biden. I mean, I'll do it if you make me and nominate Donald Trump, which it appears your tribe is going to do. But I'm not like, you know, over the moon about it. And I think that there are a lot of those voters that they may not like Joe Biden, but they are, you know, repulsed by Donald Trump. And if that's the Republican nominee, they'll vote for the other guy.
You know, I think in terms of a PR campaign, what the uncommitted forces did was effective in the sense that it got a boatload of national headlines. It got a boatload of national media. It was a real pain for President Biden. And it's not the kind of thing where he can just go, oh gosh, we got past Michigan. Now let me forget about this. He's got to come back here and fix this somehow, if it's even possible to like smooth things over. If I were running that campaign, just like if I was the quarterback on a football team that won the game, and I said, look at those great three passes I threw for touchdowns, and I ignored what my lineman did and what my running back did and what my defense did. I mean, that's been completely ignored in most of the analysis of this. They'll say, oh, look at the uncommitted campaign. Listen to Michigan. I'm not ripping on their work whatsoever, but they're claiming 100% credit for 100,000 votes. We've seen there are uncommitted votes every single time. And then poll after poll after poll shows it's not just Republicans that don't like Joe Biden. It's not just independents that are nervous about Joe Biden. It's a huge swath of Democrats who are very nervous about Joe Biden, not just his age, because Donald Trump is up there. It's his ability to carry out the duties of the office. That's what we're still talking about, you know, the potential candidacy of Gretchen Whitmer for president or Gavin Newsom or whoever. There's already a huge amount of people who are very concerned about Joe Biden. If Barack Obama managed to get 11% of the people going against him in his reelect, we shouldn't have been surprised that there'd be a larger percentage that were expressing concern about Biden. And it was a freebie.
So what do you think is next for this group? Do you think this is something that's going to continue to follow Biden through to Election Day? Do you think this is something that's going to peter off? I mean, I guess probably a lot of it depends on what he does and what the situation in Gaza ends up being in the next coming months. But I guess what are your sort of hypotheticals right now?
Well, there are two types of folks that were involved in the push for people to vote uncommitted over Gaza. There are folks that want the administration to change course in terms of policy, and there are folks who are just determined to defeat the president because they are so wounded by what U.S. policy has been up until now. The second group's not gettable. The first group potentially is. In terms of what you know, Congresswoman Tlaib and her sister and the other organizers of the Listen to Michigan campaign are likely to do next, I think they are going to try and take this show on the road. I think the results will be even worse than they were in Michigan because they don't have the same type of base to tap into. And we say that uncommitted got in the neighborhood of 13% this time, which is barely more than 2012. That growth, percentage-wise, a lot of that is attributable to us having the largest, you know, Arab American, Muslim American population in the country of any other state. So the terrain gets worse for them in other states, not better.
So, you know, primary elections can be fickle, right? I mean, talking about President Biden and the different people who voted uncommitted for different reasons, I, you know, totally agree. I think some of the people who voted uncommitted are, you know, were upset about the situation in Israel. And then a lot of them as well, it's their way to reflect on, I'm not super into this candidate. So kind of playing all of that out there, you know, are there any predictions we can make for November from the primary?
I think we have to assume that support for President Biden from the epicenter of Dearborn and going outward to Dearborn Heights and Detroit and areas around there, Hamtramck, I think that was, they listed out all the polling locations they went to were in those areas. That's the core center of it. And to me, there's a second layer that gets affected by that movement, which is the youth vote on our college campuses. President Biden's probably lucky that, like, my intern is in Cabo San Lucas while I'm here freezing to death because they're on spring break. So a lot of college students are gone, and they could have very been easily motivated to capitalize on their already growing distrust with a Biden presidency to vote uncommitted. Why not? We could have done that. So that could have been bigger. So it's not just the Arab American vote, but it's the youth vote. They're tied together, and they just have a lot of work to do on that. In past years, we would see major surrogates come into Michigan and go to Ann Arbor and to go to East Lansing and go to Kalamazoo. We didn't see that this time because they don't feel like helping set up a protest rally.
That's interesting. I'm really curious to get both of your thoughts. Like, how important is the youth vote for each party this coming election? I know it's always a kind of significant block of voters, sometimes not very tapped into block of voters, but in this particular election where it's going to be so close, how are things looking on that front?
You know, if Democrats are able to turn out some youth vote in November, it would be helpful to them. I don't expect that to be the case. I think that perceptions amongst political observers have been warped by the last two election cycles when a higher proportion of young people voted. By and large, in American politics, people don't start voting consistently until they get into their late 30s, early 40s. And so relying on the youth vote is a dangerous, dangerous strategy. Anything that they can add to that at the margins is helpful to them. But if they're relying on the youth vote to win the November election, they will lose.
And well, clearly, right now from the GOP side, they're just trying to figure out how to get control of the Twitter account and turn the lights out of the office. Like
the checkbook.
They're not really working at that level yet. I think they're going to improve massively now, but a little bit of struggle there to go.
Right. Well, you know, on that front, do you think, you know, things are looking up for the Michigan Republican Party this week? We had a judge say that Christina Caramo was properly removed as chair. She is no longer chair. She at least seems to have maybe stopped calling herself chair on the internet, but I don't know if, you know, that's just all for show. You know, do we see this turning a corner here?
As far as things looking up, when the bar is in hell, you're always looking up. So, yes.
John?
The Democrats have had a huge advantage. First of all, I've been in both situations. When you have a governor at the top that can raise money, that gives you credibility and oomph, that's super important. When you have a chair that's credible and doing the kind of things that professional operatives do, like the Democrats have in Laura Barnes, they do better. They are out there right now pitching to the media that they have this special program they put in place after they lost in 2016 that was essentially the always on grassroots campaign, and good for them. They need to pitch their stuff, but they're having to go out and do that. In my estimation, I'm getting calls by the media, so that's the only reason I'm bringing it up. They're having to do that because they're trying to say, how do I counter the fact that you have a president nobody wants to stand next to you? How do you counter the fact that Donald Trump is ahead in the last five or six polls in Michigan? What is it exactly that you're doing to make Democrats not just sort of like give up and not think that they can win? And so the Dems are going out there saying, okay, this was our advantage. We've got a better ground game. And the ground game matters generally. One of my old bosses on the Romney campaign would say, the candidate's got to get us in position to win and we can kick the field goal. I don't know that Joe Biden's getting the ball into position for that right now.
Yeah, no, it turns out that, you know, when you set up a presidential election between two doddering old fools, one of them has to stumble into the presidency, but neither of these campaigns are really setting the world on fire right now. And we see some evidence of that in what just happened in the Michigan primary and in the prior primaries on the GOP side, where pollsters have been consistently overestimating Donald Trump's support in these Republican primaries, you know, by a very large margin. Now, granted, primaries are difficult to poll, but, you know, we're seeing poll results for Donald Trump in the high 70s and in the 80s, and he's not clocking those numbers right now. So I think that neither campaign is doing a particularly good job of capitalizing on opportunities. There are, you know, John pointed to, for instance, Lavora Barnes here in Michigan, the Democratic Party chair. who's doing yeoman's work with her and her staff going out trying to organize people, doing the nuts and bolts blocking and tackling of running a political campaign. Contrast that with the Biden campaign itself, which just started staffing up in Michigan other than their state director about 3 weeks ago. Little late to the game there. Normally you'd want to see something like that in Michigan months before that. There's not a road to reelection for Joe Biden without Michigan. And the fact that they're just staffing up right now while MDP has been out doing the grassroots organizing that a competent political campaign would be doing has to concern Democrats.
You know, I think one thing to consider in the bigger picture here is clearly Pete Hoekstra has been around the block. He is an operative. He's a congressman. He's an ambassador. He's got the bandwidth to take this kind of thing on. So is he starting off behind? Yeah, absolutely he is. But there's a change at the top of the RNC. Donald Trump showed up in Michigan. He called into the election night party. They know that they need to win Michigan. They want to win Michigan. It's going to make life a heck of a lot easier in November. My guess is we're going to see a flood of resources come from the RNC. And we have to remember, too, and I don't know the budget over at the Democratic Party, but most of the field staff operations every cycle are already funded by the RNC. Most of the staff that comes in comes with RNC email addresses. They might sit at the state party building out of convenience and communications, but they're really funded by what happens in D.C. and whether a state was within grasp or not. The other part to consider is that in Michigan, because of Donald Trump, a lot of county parties can be chaotic, but they have a lot of energy. There's a lot of people. Everybody's not just sitting at home waiting for Christina Crum or Pete Hoekstra to tell them it's time to start campaigning or doing things. They're very active. There's already a lot of activity there. So Chairman Hoekstra's job is going to be to organize them, to give them direction, to communicate with them. I think that's going to be there's going to be a massive improvement compared to the darkened GOP offices we just passed in the hallway over here.
So lightning round with one question. Aside from stop being old men, what is the number one thing that Biden and Trump need to do to win Michigan?
You know, I think from the perspective of the Biden campaign, they have to find a way to, number one, showcase their candidate in a way that makes him look like he's, I don't even want to say up to the job, but more up to the job than his opponent. Right. That is clearly part of the task. The vibes are super messed up for Democrats as far as their candidates are, their candidate is concerned right now. And they need to fix that. Democrats are polling very well on the issues. The problem is not the issues. The problem is the man. For Republicans, things look kind of similar, but in reverse. The overestimation of Trump support in the primary polls points to some problems for the GOP. But I think there's also a problem for the GOP in that for all of the problems that Biden has with independents, Trump has massive problems with independents, right? We see that reflected in public opinion polling around the country. And the Trump campaign has got to find a way to either attenuate their candidate's behavior, an unlikely prospect, or they need to take a page out of the Biden 2020 playbook and hide their candidate a little more.
I think the Michigan Democrats are in a really tough spot. Watching Lavora Barnes on all the cable shows, I got my email this morning with all of her featured news hits. She's sitting there stuck between trying to indicate to people here in Michigan on the ground in Dearborn and Detroit and other places that she's hearing them, that she's taking their concerns to the president. And then she's stuck not trashing the president and trying to say, I think he's good. He's going to figure this out there. And Governor Whitmer, obviously, in exactly the same spot. She put up a 24-hour, 36-hour, hey, everybody, don't vote uncommitted, and then got the heck out of the way because you were just going to get run over in that situation. So they're in a tough spot. I don't know how they're going to reassure those things. I mean, you could argue, one, could some kind of ceasefire take place that would take some of the edge off what's happening in Gaza? And two, we've seen them hire people that were in Michigan last cycle in the White House to work on communications with black voters across Michigan and America. They need to do a better job of shoring up, in particular from what I've read from their commentators from those communities with black males. They need to do a better job communicating with them that it matters that you vote for Joe Biden, and mostly keeping Joe Biden away from the microphone. And for Donald Trump, it's super easy. When your opponent is completely imploding, stay the hell out of the way. Now that's easier for some than others, but he's being disciplined for the most part in moving forward on his campaigns, other than like maybe like the NATO thing that came up as an example, something like that maybe. But his campaign's been super disciplined. He's been super disciplined about staying out of Biden's way. Just make this election about Biden. And there's sort of that recollection, that old feeling that, oh, before the pandemic, things in the economy were better. That's how he wins those independent voters back.
John Selleck and Adrian Heman, the baldly bipartisan dream team. Thank you so much for joining us here on Mishmash.
This was fun.
Check us out at baldlybipartisan.com.
Mishmash is produced by WDET, Detroit's NPR station, in collaboration with Gongwer News Service. Mishmash is hosted and produced by me, Shayna Roth, and Gongwer's Zach Gorchow and Alethea Kasman. Additional production and editing by Hearns Laguerre Jr., mixing, mastering, and music by Sam Bobian. Our digital team is Dave Kim, Sophia Joswiak, and Jenny Sherman. Our news director is Jerome Vaughn, and our podcast manager is David Lyons. As always, if you listen to this show and want to support it, you can do so by leaving us a review or comment wherever you listen. You can subscribe or follow us on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, basically wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Tell your friends about how much you've learned from Mishmash and send them a link. Remember, we're produced by a public radio station, which means we are listener supported. So if you really, really like this podcast, and we really, really hope you do, you can support WDET by going to WDET.org/give and become a member of WDET at WDET.org.